To call this meeting of the House Judiciary Committee to order, it is 1:21. With us today are Representative Klayman, Representative Lynn, Representative Grunberg, and Vice Chair Keller, and I am Chair Ledoux. To begin with, please silence your electronic devices. And we have two bills today, which have been previously heard and that we are going to be talking about today. First is HB 79, an act relating to controlled substances, the marijuana bill, and HB 5, an act relating to the persons who may be appointed conservators of a protected person. We also have before us George Brown, appointed by the governor to the Violent Crimes Compensation Board. We will be hearing Dr. Brown's qualifications today and recommending that his name be referred to a joint committee for consideration. The order of business today will be to hear HB 5, and it is my intent that we move this bill out of committee. Then we will hear the testimony and qualifications of Dr. Brown, and we will finish today's hearing by introducing the new CS for House Bill 79, which I do not anticipate moving out of today. First up, presenting is HB 5, is Cecile Elliott. Ms. Elliott, could you please come forward, place yourself on the record, and proceed with your presentation.
Thank you. Cecile Elliott, staff to Representative Hawker. And I'm here to discuss House Bill 5, should there be any further questions. There were a couple of things discussed in committee last time regarding the use of language in the bill by blood, marriage, or adoption. This is terminology that's used throughout statute and is a generally understood term that if you're related by marriage, you're an in-law. This is defined in Black's Law Dictionary as well as Webster's, and to my knowledge, there has not been confusion about that. The courts, I think Nancy's here if there was some concern about that. Then there was also a fiscal note presented. There are three fiscal notes. There was a fiscal note, an indeterminate fiscal note presented by Department of Health and Social Services. Representative Hawker disagrees with this and feels that it is the express intent of the sponsor that this bill be implemented with no additional state resources. House Bill 5, the intent of House Bill 5 is to a narrowly scope change to expand the definition of family to serve as a conservator. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Does anybody have any questions for Ms. Elliott?
I don't have questions.
Representative Klayman.
I don't have questions for Ms. Elliott, but I know we had some discussions in the last few days about the legislative, the person with legislative legal who had provided some input, and I had some questions for that person if they're available.
Is there anybody from legislative legal available here? Doesn't sound like it. So are there any more, are there any questions for Ms. Elliott? Right, thank you. This time I'd like to open the floor for public testimony. And we have off net Darren Colby.
Chair, yes? Mr. Colby is online for questions only. He presented last committee.
Okay, thank you. Is there anybody else either offline at one of the LIOs or here in the audience who would like to testify? Okay, then I will close public testimony. I think I saw somebody's hand.
Ms. Darling?
Then I will reopen it again. Would you like to proceed to the lectern and identify yourself for the record?
My name is Marie Darlin, and I'm representing the AARP Legislative Task Force here. And I just want to say that you had in your file our letter of support for the original bill. And there's been so much discussion and everything else that I think that's where we stand right now. And that's all I have to say, unless anybody's got any questions.
Does anybody have any questions for Ms. Darling? Representative Clayman.
I had had some discussions with other members of the committee about the rather than just have a limited number of people that might be able to get exempted from the conflict provisions. And if this gets too confusing, let me know. But I was curious whether AARP sees the conflicts arising with any frequency, or is that a very rare event for purposes of getting concerned?
Well, we don't get a great deal of reports on it. What we do is we go to our to the people who have the knowledge of what the reports are. And right now we're in the process of looking again at whatever proposals there are to make any changes other than our original statement, which was we reported the we supported the original bill.
And one follow-up. Do you have any idea about who are typically getting appointed as conservators for primarily the elderly? Who are primarily getting appointed, and is it hard to find folks to serve in that role?
I have no idea.
Okay. That's all.
Thank you. Any further questions? Thanks very much for coming and testifying. Is there anybody else in the audience who would like to testify? Going once? Going twice? You're not in the audience, Representative Bruner.
I can sit over there.
Did you have a question for anybody?
I have a question for Representative Clayman for just a moment.
Can I close? I'd like to close public testimony, and then we will bring it back to the committee.
This has to do with a potential witness. Do you want
one
us to
question?
See, do you want us to see if we can, if Terry Bannister has come back to Ledge Legal?
You can answer the question.
Yeah, I'm curious if she's on. We thought she was going to phone in, and she might have phoned in while we were.
Then she might have. Would you check and see if she phoned my office?
Chair Ledoux, I made a phone call to Ledge Legal. I sent the message and came back in quickly in case I was needed.
Well.
Do you know if she's back? Is it possible to see if she was coming back from lunch, and it may
you
be?
You know, we are at 1:30. We have a number of things to do. I want to get this bill out today,
okay.
Representative Grunberg. Thank you very much.
Okay,
I think we'll be.
Okay, so I am now going to close public testimony. Do we have any discussion or amendments on this bill? Representative Clayman.
I won't be offering an amendment today, the work I've been doing in the last several days since we last heard the bill is to the idea that we should basically take out the first phrase of paragraph C and make it just so that somebody that would otherwise be conflicted can go to the judge and ask the judge to waive the conflict. We've had a lot of discussions with Representative Hawker's office, which I appreciate, and so we may continue to kind of explore options, but I don't see that as a reason to not get the bill on a committee today.
Thank you, Representative Clayman. So is there any further discussion on the bill? Representative Keller.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to Representative Clayman for working on that with the sponsor. I move that the committee zero out the indeterminate fiscal note that was presented by the Department of Health and Social Services.
Hearing no objection, that motion carries. Can I have a motion to move HB 5, draft 29 LS0032W, committee with recommendations and attached fiscal note? Zero fiscal notes.
Madam Chair, I move HB 5, version 29 LS0032W, with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal notes.
So, hearing no objection, the bill moves, and brief at ease so everybody can sign the report. The next item on the agenda is that we are going to be talking to Dr. George Brown, the governor's appointee, to fill a vacant slot on the Violent Crimes Compensation Board. And it is important to note that our job here today is merely to review Dr. Brown's curriculum vitae and recommend that his name be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. There is no vote here in the committee today for or against Dr. Brown's confirmation. Committee members should feel free to ask questions as they arise, but to keep in mind that we are not voting on the doctor's qualifications, only reviewing them. Dr. Brown, please put your name on the record and give us a brief history of your professional qualifications. Thank you for being here with us today.
Chairman Ledoux and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to be here. I live at 1640 2nd Street in Douglas. I'm licensed as a medical doctor, and I've been licensed in Alaska since early 1970s. My specialty is in pediatrics. I practiced in Alaska for most of my career and have lived here in the Juneau area since 2001. I was appointed by Governor Parnell to serve out the term that had a vacancy that had occurred, and so I've actually attended now four board meetings, and I'm learning the ropes there. In my work in clinical medicine and in public health, my interest has been the prevention of family violence and child abuse. And because so many of the families who apply for compensation for this are obviously suffering the results of these kinds of problems, I think that my experience in this area does provide qualifications. And I'll be more than happy to answer any specific questions.
Thank you. Does anybody on the committee have any questions for Dr. Brown? No one? All right. Is there... That's what I just asked, Representative Grunberg. If anybody had any questions, certainly.
Thank you. Doctor... is Bowman Gray School of Medicine, is that associated with the University of North Carolina, or is it independent?
It's with Wake Forest. It's a good Southern Baptist institution, and it is a part of the Wake Forest University. When I went there, it was Wake Forest College, but it's been there a long time. At the time, it was there were only three medical schools in North Carolina.
Thank you.
Representative Keller.
I just want to say thank you for your willingness to serve. The responsibility stepping forward. Thanks.
Well, I'm honored to be asked. I would like to add this updated chronological observation. It was last Tuesday night I went to the governor's mansion for the celebration of the Alaska Children's Trust Fund, which I worked hard to get started. And it was a talk with some friends and colleagues, a very exciting and confirming experience to be there and see how that organization continues to work at the primary prevention of these problems. And I'm confident as time goes forward, particularly as I know more and more Alaskans, both Native Alaskans and American or white or whatever we call ourselves, Alaskans, that we will work together and continue to decrease this problem. And I am very honored to get to serve on this board.
Representative Clement.
And Dr. Brown, I appreciate your willingness to serve. I appreciate your taking the time to come by my office and visit with me. As I told you, my family, I'm the one that didn't follow the path to medicine. Glad to see that not only have you been serving this community for such a long time, but in, I guess, retirement, you're willing to continue to serve.
Well, I would like to mirror those thoughts. Thank you for coming here to introduce yourself. Thank you for coming to my office so that we could visit and talk about the Violent Crimes Compensation Board. And thank you for your willingness to serve.
You're most welcome.
And with that, we will take a brief at ease, unless Representative Millett, who has just joined us.
I think you need a motion, right?
Pardon me?
You need a motion. I know I have it.
Right. Yeah. Unless Representative Millett, who has just joined us, has any. Thank you. Okay. So.
Madam Chair, I move that we move Dr. Brown's name forward for this position to the full body for consideration.
Hearing no objections, we'll now take a brief at ease to sign the recommendations. Before we begin with HB 79, I'd like to recognize that we have with us in the audience Kayla Epstein, the wife of Representative Grunberg, and also the person who comes down here each year with the close-up students. And maybe you'd like to identify, Kayla, the students that you have with you today.
We're on the record, but they're not at the mic.
Wow. Well, welcome. I hope you enjoy our committee today and get something out of it. We certainly, or I certainly, got something out of coming before you folks in doing the mock committee. I think it was yesterday or the day before. That's always something that I really enjoy doing. So.
Madam Chair, are they going to testify on this bill, perhaps?
There's the opportunity to, if they would like to. So,
Madam Chair, yeah, I appreciated what you said, because all these years I thought Kayla came down to accompany me, but now I know she came down to teach and just hangs out at my house, our house.
Well, we now have before us HB 79, the Marijuana Crime Bill. And we have a new committee substitute for HB 79, and that's 29-LSO409/G. Can I have a motion to bring the new CS before the committee?
Madam Chair, I move the new CS version G before the committee for discussion. For action.
I'm going to object for discussion.
Okay. So to help us in our discussion, we have Thomas Brown, my staffer, and the House Judiciary Aid Committee, to the House Judiciary Committee, and he will present a brief summary of the changes from the version previously heard in the committee. And I think before Thomas does that, I'll give you folks an kind of an update as to where things stand in the scheduling of this bill. We are expecting early next week, and I'm crossing my fingers as I say that we will have a bill from the other body crossing over. Mm-hmm. That bill from the other body will be, assuming that it does cross over, we anticipate that being the vehicle. But during the last few weeks, our committee hearings and the other body's committee hearings, they've mirrored each other in that we've been talking about basically the same CSs. So we're where they are right now. And I think today, as Thomas is speaking, I think that the judiciary chair in the other body's aid is presenting the very same bill. So, with that, Mr. Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Thomas Brown, staff to Representative Ledoux. Members of the committee, Madam Chair, House Bill 79 has undergone some fairly radical revisions over the last few weeks. I'm going to walk you through the most relevant changes in the bill since it was last before you. Having learned from my previous times in this seat, I'm going to ignore the technical amendments for the most part and only stick to real policy changes and not all of the manifold conforming amendments. I should note that the committee had received last week a separate CS, version I, which was ultimately discarded in favor of the version before you now. Since the committee had never heard or adopted version I, the summary of changes you have before you will only address the revisions between version P, which you had heard last week, and the one before you now, version G. Version I is still in your packet if you need a reference back to see the track of changes, the history of changes between versions. So, summary of changes from version P to version G. Most particularly, all references in this version to preparations, compounds, mixtures, or substances have been replaced with marijuana. Blanket term to conform with the definition of marijuana as stated in the initiative AS 1738.900. More specifically, former Section 32 it was conforming language dealing with Statute 1255.135 related to sentencing for certain marijuana crimes has been deleted and repealed in the final section. This section is now superfluous as misdemeanors listed in the bill do not require jail time over 1 year, so a bail schedule as listed in this section is ultimately unnecessary.
Mr. Brown, when you talk about all references to compounds, preparations, etc., where are you talking about them there? Where was it before?
Madam Chair, all throughout the bill. I believe the first reference to it...
What I'm trying to determine, Mr. Brown, is there were places throughout the bill where it was talking about weight.
That is in another section, I believe section 51, that was also deleted. I can give you a specific page number, or at least section number if you'd care to, but I will be coming to that in my summary of changes.
Okay. Continue.
So section 44, which added 17.38020 from the ballot initiative, was added into this bill at, if you'll remember, the extreme behest of just about everybody who called in to testify on behalf of the bill, and it was directly from the ballot initiative. It was added pretty much verbatim into this bill with the major amendment of the language, notwithstanding any other provision of law, was deleted from the section that we added into this bill. In section 50, we added 17.38110 from the ballot initiative, the also known as the local option provision.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you. For those of us who don't remember what everybody said in the old hearings we've had, section 44, you just said, and why was it added again? What did people say that needed to be in the bill?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, all the testimony we received, both in person, off net, and on behalf of many of the proponents of the ballot initiative, said that this was the strongest language possible to determine, to definitively state that marijuana is legal, that personal possession is legal, that personal consumption is legal. The previous version of the bill did not have this language in there, did not have 020 in there. It simply removed marijuana from the list of controlled substances and stated that possession was not a crime. The addition of this section makes it explicit in very many ways, in about four or five different ways, that it is legal for Alaskans over the age of 21 to possess, grow, and consume marijuana.
So this is the core section of the bill, really.
As far as through the chair, Representative Grunberg, as far as the proponents of the ballot initiative are concerned, I would probably say yes, sir. Except for I can't speak on their behalf, but I would.
Just wanted that on the record.
Representative Miller, continue.
Yes, Section 50, also known as the local option provision, was amended to specify. It was added again, also from the ballot initiative, Section 17.38.110.
Which section are we on right now?
It's Section 50 of the bill, and it's 17.38.110, which is also in the ballot initiative.
Pages 28, 29.
110 or?
110.
Bottom of page
20. Okay, we're on what's?
We're on section 50.
Section 50, okay. What line?
Madam Chair, I believe it's on page 29, lines 2 through 4.
And that's where I'm not right. Seeing 210, I'm seeing 200.
It begins on page 28, line 29. 1738.110A.
I think I have the wrong.
Yeah, version G.
That's my problem. At ease. Thank you. Proceed.
So beginning on page 28, section 50, the local option provision, and on the following page 29, lines 2 through 4, it was amended to read, an established village may prohibit the operation of marijuana cultivation. It was just to specify specifically that local government included established villages.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you. I have like three questions, if I may proceed.
Go ahead.
Number one. There's another bill that's in the CNRA committee that I thought deals with this subject. Are we going to have potentially two bills from two different committees reading differently? I don't need an answer right now, but the staff might take a look. I know there was a bill that was referred to CNRA, and I'll leave that up to you, Thomas. Number two, is the term, and I'm not intimately familiar with AS 17.38, the chapter, I don't have it in front of me. Is the term established village a term that's defined somewhere? You can look, you can get an answer on that later. I'm just kind of flagging things at this point so I don't delay the thing. And finally, it says on line 4, no, I'm sorry, on line 1, current text of this statute says a local government may prohibit this by the enactment of an ordinance or a voter initiative. However, the new language that's being added says that they may prohibit the operation of these things by a voter initiative as provided in that other statute. First of all, what's the difference between the two sentences? And secondly, why is the new language apparently limited to voter initiatives why not an ordinance as well to mirror the language on line one?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, the original language was taken from the ballot initiative, which only used the term local government. As to the specific definition of an established village, I'm afraid I will have to defer to one of the experts from the Department of Law or HESS or someone else that we have here that can maybe give you a better answer than I could.
Yeah, Madam Chair, let's look at this. You know, I won't take the committee's time now, and I'd be particularly interested in knowing whether it was the intent of the initiative, the ballot measure, to limit this to a voter initiative, or whether that was intended to add an initiative. So it could be either by an ordinance or an initiative. We can talk about this. I'm just, Madam Chair, I'm just flagging issues.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Keller.
Yeah, first I'd like to just note for the record how well-behaved our when Kayla's in the off room.
I know.
You got it.
But I'd also call your attention on page 37, if you look there. Page 37, line 15, I believe it's defined there. So.
Well, thank you.
Thanks to my expert staff in the back of the room. So
that's great. Good job.
And then, Madam Chair?
Representative Mellett.
I guess my question would be on Representative Gruenberg's question, enactment of an ordinance or by voter initiative, isn't that the only two ways that municipalities can actually enact a law? Or, I mean, I don't know of any other way.
I suppose, through the chair, I suppose it would depend in an individual situation whether it's allowed by charter or something. My only concern was it seems in the first language, line one, it allows the enactment, the prohibition may be either by an ordinance or an initiative, but they don't mention on line four that they could do this by an ordinance. It's the only thing that's mentioned is the word initiative, and this I can find that, we can look into that. Thank you.
Proceed.
So, Section 51, beginning on page 29, has done quite a bit. It removed the crime of possession of more than 4 ounces. Changed the prohibition of manufacture with a substance other than vegetable glycerin to prevent a person other than a registered marijuana establishment from producing a marijuana concentrate or extract, to language that using a volatile or explosive gas. It makes certain exceptions for a medical marijuana patient registered under AS 1737 who is at least 18 years old to enter a marijuana establishment and purchase marijuana. It removes the crime of possession of more than 1 ounce and less than 4 ounces. It removed two separate sections, one which dealt with rehabilitation and the other which, Madam Chair, you had referred to earlier, which had established weight calculations for marijuana plants. The reason that section was removed, 1738.260, as relating to weight calculations for marijuana plants, is that the ballot initiative was very, very clear. An ounce or 6 plants. If you've got an ounce, you've got usable marijuana. The weight of the plants is immaterial.
You mean an ounce and 6 plants?
Yes, exactly. But if there's no purpose for weighing the plants, if you're allowed to have plants as a plant, it's no longer the material of the plant that is in question. It's the amount of plants that you have. Therefore, determining the weight of the plants seemed kind of, well, unnecessary. That's why we did away with that. And we injected the term usable marijuana in many places throughout the bill that had weight calculations in it before, because it seemed more relevant to the bill and to the intent of the initiative backers.
So have we actually in this draft gone further than the initiative requires by using a 4 ounce rather than a 1 ounce?
Madam Chair, in some places, yes, to comply with the Raven precedent. So that's my understanding of it, at least.
Thank you.
I'm glad you put that on the record.
Continue.
Okay, continuing on in Section 51, the term marijuana overdose was removed, and this is on page 33, and it has been replaced with significant adverse marijuana reaction, a rather cumbersome phrase to, I believe, nod to the fact that overdoses are extremely unlikely in marijuana.
Through the chair, what line are we on?
It's page 33, sir, section 1738.260, beginning on line 10.
I see.
Well, line 11, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Do you have a question?
No, well, yeah, when that's done, I want to back up and something. So.
Continue.
Well, back, could I go back?
Yeah.
Early in the, we'll go back to page 29. Just a question that came up here. On line 11, it talks about somebody is not registered, and then down 16, the max is not more than three, which are mature flowering plants. And then, anyway, the comparison there between a person who is not registered on line 11 and the person who is registered on page 23, and yet they have exactly the same sub 2 there. And I was just wondering, you know, I just curious, I don't get it, you know, and why that would be the same.
Through the chair, Representative Keller, if I may, where on page 23?
Okay, on what I'm really calling to attention is on page 29, lines 15 and 16, it appear to be identical to lines 29 and 30. And on lines 15 and 16, it's talking about somebody who's not registered marijuana establishment, and then the other two, 29 and 30, are talking about somebody that is registered as a marijuana establishment.
Through the chair, Representative Keller, I believe that is another drafting error, as I have already, as I look over my notes here, I've already marked the lines 15, 16, and 17, 18 out to be amended in future.
Those will be taken out of the is not a registered.
Through the chair, Representative Millett, we'll be having a discussion about that just to make sure we understand it completely first, but yes.
Thank you. Continue.
Continue on with section
15. Representative Kleiman.
I want to go back to the term significant marijuana.
Significant adverse marijuana reaction, sir.
So I tried to find if it was defined anywhere, and I didn't see that defined anywhere. Did I miss that?
I don't think there's any place that defines significant adverse marijuana.
I mean, I understand it's, through the chair, challenging definition, but I was wondering if there was one.
Representative Grunberg.
I believe, and I would ask Mr. Brown if he could check on this. This mirrors a bill we passed a couple of years ago. I think it was Beth Kurtula's bill, I think, but I'm not sure. And it talked about, and it may have been maybe when you served, it was a little while ago, and it dealt with somebody who was in this situation and therefore could not be prosecuted. And I'm wondering what that other bill does, and is this mirror that, or how the two bills relate?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, actually, I believe that would be Representative Pruitt's bill from just last session that did this, and it was basically immunity from prosecution in the in circumstances of drug overdoses. If you are at a party, someone overdoses on a drug, you can call the EMS, the police, emergency services, and not be prosecuted for being in attendance, possessing and using a controlled substance, you know, and just in the to the purpose of saving someone's life. And it was actually, yes, we did poach the language from that.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
So, and the reason you put this in here is because all the marijuana stuff is together here, and you don't then reference back to the previous bill. You could just add it as a category in the previous bill, but it sounds like you wanted to do it here because all the marijuana stuff is together here. Through the chair, is that right?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, that's correct. It's another conforming amendment so that we can put all of the marijuana together and basically have a fairly comprehensive structure for dealing with marijuana-related crimes.
And just one final follow-up. Is there any significant difference between this version and the Pruitt bill? We don't need an answer right now if you could just get back to me. I'm not trying to do a gotcha here.
Thank you, Representative Grunberg. Continue.
If I could, Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
First, on page 31, still in section 51, I think it is. I just want a clarification of how everybody else reads this, but it's talking there about on line 3, it possesses more than 6 but less than 25 plants. And then on a separate line there in III, it's up to 6 immature plants. So are we talking, what are the numbers here? I found myself confused as I read it. If we're talking 25, 31.
Through the chair, Representative Keller, it is my reading that the possession of more than 6 but less than 25 is merely for possession. B3 on that page, line 9 and 10, is up to 6 immature marijuana plants for remuneration. The other one has to deal with dealing.
Oh.
So there's possession and there's dealing. That's the distinction between the two.
That helps. Thanks.
Continuing
on with section 51. Next, we removed an entire section, Alaska Statute 1738.290, which allowed for forfeitures and seizures of property and monies in relation to marijuana crimes. We added about 7 sections after that. One which allows.
Can you tell us what page you're on?
Beginning on page 34, we added, beginning on line 22, section 1738.280 allows for the confidentiality of court records of minors. If they're charged with a violation, they're under 18 years of age, violation having to do with marijuana, they can have their court records kept confidential. Which will become important in a later section that I get to. Then,
Madam Chair, before we go on, while we're on page 33, up on line 7, 8, and 9, to the attorneys in the room, can we tell the Supreme Court what to do without anticipating a court rule change to be attached?
My understanding is that we can on something like this. We have not been told by the court attorney that we can't.
Through the chair, Representative Keller, would you mind repeating the question?
250.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Back on page 33, up.
Ah, yes, that's okay.
Yeah.
Through the chair, Representative Keller, we spoke with the representative of the court system, and they said that this has been done a couple dozen times before in Alaska statute, that the legislature does, in fact, have the authority to do that. Okay. They don't like it, but the court does accept it.
Well, shoot, you want to do it more often.
Representative Grunberg.
I think the answer to your question, Representative Keller, through the chair, maybe. The word shall can be used in two different ways. One is a mandatory, means you must, and the other is a directory, and I don't know if that's the right word, that says the court system shall do it rather than the legislature. It simply specifies who has the responsibility, doesn't mandate them to do it, but says we're looking to you to do it and we're not going to do the bail schedule ourselves. And I think that's probably the way it's used here.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. This is for the close-up kids in the room. It's a repetition for the committee. If it wasn't for attorneys, we wouldn't need them.
If it wasn't for legislators, we wouldn't need them.
Mr. Brown, you want to continue?
Thank you, Madam Chair. To continue with Section 51. Beginning on page 34, line 26, and continuing on to page 37, line 9, 1738-290 to 1738-340, the local option rule. It sets out the it allows and defines local option procedures for exemptions from commercial marijuana use. It's quite a bit. It sets out ballot language, so forth, how to remove local option, the effects of local option on registrations, prohibitions, procedures, establishment of perimeters of established villages, and notification of the results of a local option election.
Madam Chair.
Representative Kamen.
And I apologize to go back to page 34 on the court records, confidential records provision. Is that mirroring similar provisions for minor consuming, or is the minor consuming not confidential? And if you don't know the answer, you can find out later.
Through the chair, Representative Kamen, I'm pretty sure I know the answer, but I don't want to give you the wrong information, so can I get back to you on that with what I'm sure is the right answer?
Continue.
Madam Chair, now, for the record, I asked some questions a little while ago on these local options, and I just like those questions carried over into our further discussion on this stuff here.
Okay, to continue with Section 51. We amended the third-degree marijuana misconduct violations to make it punishable by a fine of no more than $300.
Madam Chair, where is that in the
That's
bill?
That's what I was just going
that
to
That is on page 32, line 16.
32?
Page 32, line 16.
Yeah. 916. And it would be helpful if you could identify pages and line numbers as you go through these.
Madam Chair, was the, you said that the language on page 32, lines 15 and 16, I gather that's new language? Or what was it previously, through the chair?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, give me one moment and I can find out for you. I have the previous language here.
But you did say that was new, right? Wasn't that what you were just talking about? Okay.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg. Previously, the language was misconduct involving marijuana in the third degree is a violation and is punishable as provided in AS 1255, which set up a whole series of different, you know, schedules and procedures depending on amounts and so forth and circumstances. This limits it to 300, which is also in line with the ballot initiative, which set a maximum fine of $400 for such a, for such offenses.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, same page, page 32, lines 25 and 26. We amended that to make the maximum fine for misconduct involving marijuana in the fourth degree to be punishable by a fine of $100. I might add that part of the reason we made these two amendments, the $300 amendment and the $100 amendment, is so that they could be paid through through forfeiture proceedings. You don't have to go to court to pay. You can pay it the same way you pay a traffic ticket or the same way you pay anything small time like that. Just go to the county. Yeah, exactly.
Madam Chair, I gather that if a person says, let's say they have two cigarettes, and the total amount is whatever it is, would they be subject to two different counts under the fourth degree, or just one? Is each cigarette a different count? Each cookie a different count. So you have six cookies, you're going to have to pay $600.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, that's not my understanding. Unless each joint weighed more than an ounce, I don't think that would be.
They'd aggregate it.
That is my understanding, but I can get you more specific.
Let's confirm that. Thank you, Madam Chair. That's an expensive cookie.
Continue.
Continuing on with section 51, beginning on page 29, lines 11, 12, and 13, and repeated a couple times throughout, we added exceptions for marijuana misconduct crimes for people acting in the person's capacity as an officer, agent, or employee of the marijuana establishment.
What page is this?
Beginning on page 29, through Madam Chair, beginning on page 29, the first instance is on line 12 of that page.
Continue.
We added to. Continuing on with Section 51, same page, was added to the first-degree marijuana misconduct crime, the crime of manufacturing more than six marijuana plants, not more than three of which are mature, which Representative Keller had pointed out earlier. Same page, 29, beginning on 15 and 16. However, as I said, those two lines may be amended. However, that same language is repeated on lines 29 and 30 of the same page, 29.
Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
On line 20, page 29, it appears to say that you commit first degree misconduct if at the time of the, say, possession, B, it's a or the person is acting in the person's capacity as an officer, agent, or employee of the marijuana establishment, and the transportation or possession of the marijuana doesn't comply with the requirements of registration, and the person knowingly transports one more than 1 ounce or whatever it is there. It doesn't seem to require that that the person have any knowledge that that particular possession was improperly registered. All you need to know is that you're transporting the marijuana. In other words, you could be thinking that the organization, the company, had registered, and you could frankly have nothing to do with the actual possession. It's enough if you are an officer. Let's say there's a president, vice president, and a secretary, treasurer of a company, and you happen to be the vice president, and you know they're doing this transporting, but you didn't know that it was not properly registered. Somebody else may have been in charge. It seems to impose absolute liability for that element of the crime, and you could get up to a year in jail for that. And I don't really need an answer now. I'm just kind of flagging that as an issue, which bothers me. And there may be constitutional problems with having up to a year in jail when you don't have to have any mental state on the key element of whether it was properly registered.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, not quite sure I followed that all the way through.
We can talk.
But we should have someone from the Department of Law either in the audience or online who may be able to give you something better than...
We actually do right now. I'm looking at him. Perhaps, Rick, would you like to come up here and maybe...
I didn't mean to get us off the track.
The reluctant witness? Fire?
I can hear you.
My name is Rick Spodny. I am the Deputy Attorney General for the Criminal Division. And as I understand the question, Madam Chairman, and on page 24, is there a culpable mental state that's necessary for there to be a crime? The person under this provision must be acting, so I would say that if you're acting in the capacity, you've done a certain thing. And normally, when a statute doesn't refer to a particular culpable mental state, if it's knowing, it would be knowing as to conduct and reckless as to result. Now, that's built in to Title 11. I would assume that an appellate court would read that into Title 17, because Representative Grunberg is correct that unless you make specific findings about the need for a crime to be have strict liability as a culpable mental state, that is, it doesn't make any difference what your state of mind is, unless you make specific findings, there's going to need to be a particular state of mind that a person has to commit it before they've committed a crime. Can I try it a different way for you? I mean, people look a little quizzical.
It sounds like it might be better to actually insert someplace knowingly, just so that there's a bright line and everybody knows what we're talking about, as opposed to leaving it to the courts to interpret?
Madam Chair, I always think it's better if the legislature tells the court what you want the law to be rather than let them try to make it up or guess.
Thank you. Representative Klayman.
Thank you. I'm taking a page from Representative Keller's studious attention to page 37 and 38 of the draft bill. The bill already defines criminal negligence on page 37, line 11, with reference to the Title 11, which is the section of Title 11 that Mr. Svobodny was referring to. And then down a few lines later on line 19, it also defines knowingly with reference to Title 11. This is all on page 37, Mr. Svobodny. Arguably, the only thing missing is reference to recklessly in the same part of Title 11 that would then... Oops. I'm being reminded to get the microphone in front of me. The only thing missing would be to add the definition of recklessly in reference again to Title 11. Probably solves the issue that Mr. Savabani is addressing, and he may differ my perspective, but I think that catches the reference we're talking about.
Madam Chair, Representative Klayman, I can't answer the question right away. I mean, to be just blunt about it, I think that the drafters have just made this issue way too complicated, and I would prefer that we stay with the language that we know for culpable mental states, and that's if it's conduct, it's knowingly, and a result, it's recklessly, or it could be criminally negligent with criminal negligence. Just so I don't get too far away from this, the reason I say that is, in the criminal law, there's generally four culpable mental states, we've talked about the last three of them. The other one is intentionally, and those are left for crimes murder or robbery, and most of the others focus on conduct and result.
Just a brief follow-up, but I actually agree completely that we should be referring to Title 11, not trying to reinvent that the courts have spent years interpreting those very terms and applying those statutory terms, and we shouldn't go anywhere else.
Thank you. Representative Keller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As long as we have the Department of Law up here. On page 19. Section 27. As I understand it, this is a section that applies for people that are out on parole. And what I'm really wondering about is lines 21 through 26. My question is this a standard for anybody on patrol? For it seems like a submit to a search without warrant is pretty serious. If there's reasonable suspicion that the person is violating terms of release, so having to submit to a search if the enforcement has a reasonable suspicion. I was just wondering, is that a standard approach that parole takes for like alcohol or other terms of parole?
Through the chair, Representative Keller. This is a provision that deals with bail, and it deals with and I don't have my statutes with me, but I believe this is the provision that says, if you've been charged with a crime that involves substance abuse, here's special conditions that you can have. So it allows a court to impose that as a condition of bail release in a crime that involves, for example, alcohol or drugs. And, if you got statutes, I could look it up, but I believe that's the bail provision, and that's where it's not a shall. It's a court may impose that condition depending upon what's necessary to either assure the person's appearance in court or to protect the public.
Thank you for the clarification. I'll continue to look at it, but there's always a red flag when you get into these areas approach constitutional rights. But while you're here, if I could, Madam Chair, one other question.
Realizing that we have about a half hour more and we've got about 40
okay.
pages
to get
through.
Okay, great. Usually I'm trying to keep it going rather than slow down. I'm sorry. On the description on page 23, lines 11 to 14, is that appropriate? Does that fit? My real question is, how can it's or marijuana. We're adding marijuana here, and it's under the section, I think, of synthetic drugs, and it looks to me like we're saying that a synthetic drug can consist of marijuana, and then on page line 13, if it's in loose leaf form or whatever, and I thought that's what it was. You know, so I just wonder what makes it synthetic. Just trying to get my head around what the wording there is. I'm missing something.
through the chair, again, I don't have the statutes with me. I think you're right that that is the around the synthetic drug issue. And I don't. Yeah, go ahead.
For the record, Thomas Brown, Representative Keller through the chair. You're talking about Section 37, I believe,
Section
the synthetic
37.
Drug section.
Yes.
The two key words there would be mimic or simulate. A synthetic drug, when introduced to the human body, to mimic or simulate the effect of a drug or controlled substance or marijuana. So it's not marijuana. Section C subsection C says not a controlled substance or marijuana. So if it is not a controlled substance or marijuana, but is introduced into the human body in order to mimic or simulate the effect of those drugs, controlled substances, or marijuana, then it is defined as a synthetic drug.
Thank you. I think I understand. I'm sorry, but I got it.
Okay, thank you. And this is something that we can decide. I just want to flag this here. The language on page 19, subsection 2, lines 21 through 26. Two things. Number one, can the court say as a condition of parole or probation, I assume, that you can't possess a legal substance? Can they say, you know, even though it's, the answer is yes, okay. And number two, with respect, it looks from this language like they can order a search of the person's entire residence, which could be a three-bedroom house, even if the person only occupied a very small portion of it. And is that okay? I don't need an answer to that now. You're nodding. Well, I don't know if you're just...
Madam Chair, I can answer that quickly.
So can I.
Yes, it's okay. That's actually existing. This is the existing bail statute, which has added marijuana.
Oh, I see.
So it's already in the law.
Okay, I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for the,
okay,
the jury here, too.
Yes, and Mr. Rick, why don't you stay where you are just in case there are any more questions for you?
Move my stuff up the front row.
And you can proceed, Thomas.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
For the record, Thomas Brown. Finishing up Section 51.
What page?
Beginning on page 29, section 51, beginning on page 29.
And I would like to remind the committee, since we only have a brief amount of time left, that there's going to be plenty of time to actually discuss the bill, that what would be preferable now is to actually let Mr. Brown get through the bill.
Okay. So beginning on page 29 and section 51, usable marijuana was added to the statute in reference to 1 ounce of, because that way it, again, eliminates this whole plant idea, not to worry about, since marijuana, as defined in 1738-900, includes compounds, extracts, resins, and so forth, it's 1 ounce of usable marijuana, no matter the form. That has been in place all throughout Section 51 to make sure it's all conforming and it's all very clear. So you don't have to worry about hash oil or anything else. usable marijuana in whatever form it happens to be.
Go ahead, no.
So just to be clear, what we're saying is you can have a ounce of marijuana hash oil, which has a very high level of THC, more than 6 plants, more than 25 plants, in your possession? The concentrate. Am I reading that right?
Through the chair, Representative Millett, could you repeat, please?
So, through the chair, a marijuana concentrate. You can have up to 1 ounce of marijuana concentrate in a liquid form in a hash oil, correct? That's what this is saying?
Through the chair, Representative Millett, that is my understanding, yes. But I can give you a very specific answer to make sure that I'm not...
Yeah, just to highlight that, a comment, you know, I mean, an ounce of, as I understand, an ounce of the concentrate could stoke for quite a while compared to another kind of an ounce. You know, I still think we need to look at this further.
We will be looking at it further.
So with that, I wrapped up Section 51. Section 53, beginning on page 37, as two representatives, Keller and Klayman, pointed out earlier, helped define some terms such as established village and usable marijuana.
May I ask one question, please? Is established village a term that appears elsewhere in the law, or is it new?
Through the chair, Representative Grubberg, I will get you an answer on that.
That's fine. All of my questions can be answered later. I just want to flag them.
Moving on to former sections 77 and 78, they were deleted. They were amendments to Alaska Statutes 2330-120A and 2330-235, which pertain to workers' compensation. Next, we deleted former section 88, which was an amendment to 2815-176, which was basically correcting a drafting error. It was... The section had no business being there. We fixed it. Section 116 removed language that allows testing of a minor's blood or urine for the purpose of determining the marijuana content of the minor's blood or urine, and that is on page
66.
76. Yes, 66.
66?
Beginning at the bottom of page 66, line 27. And it, yes.
What line are we talking about?
It's the bottom of page 66, beginning on line 27, and it was formally, I can tell you how it formally read in just one moment. The section formally read at the very end of it. So beginning, a person who is at least 14 years of age but not yet 21 years of age commits the offense of minor operating a vehicle after consuming alcohol or marijuana. And then at the very end, a peace officer has probable cause to believe that a person has committed the offense of minor operating a vehicle after consuming alcohol or marijuana may, and this is the section that was deleted, request that the person submit to a chemical test or test of the person's blood or urine for the purpose of determining the marijuana content of the person's blood or urine. Those last two sentences were the sections that were removed. We didn't think it was okay to randomly grab minors' blood or urine.
So we have left in request that the person submit to a chemical test or test of the person's breath for the purpose of determining alcoholic content, but not, there's no... So we're deleting any type of
urine.
Through the chair, Representative Millett, I think I see what you're saying here. Now with the bill, instead of saying that we can draw their blood or urine, we're saying that it's still okay to take their blood or breath.
Mm-hmm. We may request. Correct? We may request. It's not an absolute.
It's not. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
That's a change.
Through the chair, Representative Millett, yes. Yes, ma'am.
No, Chair. I don't know if maybe some of these other guys have the same question. Why don't you want them to test urine but allow them to test breath?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I'm going to have to get back to you on that.
Okay.
Remembering that this committee will also be in the discussion mode, and that's one of the things that we certainly can be discussing.
Oh, sure.
As long as we're on that very topic, another question I want to add to that, Tom, is back on page 63. This is caught by my staff. It just operating a vehicle you shall be considered to have given consent. And the question is that possible under other statute in Alaska where you can't give consent until you're 18, I believe. And I have some statutes you can look at a later date, you know, but in light of time, it just seems like this section here, presuming there's consent, may not be possible in somebody from age 14 to 18. It would apply to ages 18 to 21, I would think.
Through the chair, Representative Keller, it is my understanding that this language was, you're speaking of section 107 on page 63?
Right.
It's my understanding that this is existing statute, and all we did was add marijuana to it, so this is already existing law, but I believe Mr. Savadny could probably shed some light on that.
Okay.
Or I can get back to you with it at a later time, whichever
yeah,
you
later
would prefer.
Yeah, later. Sure.
Okay.
So why did they add marijuana?
Representative Klayman.
Just to clarify, I was just visiting with Representative Millett under Section 116 on page 66 and 67. The implied consent that's discussed here in this Section 116 is actually not giving authority for a blood or urine test based on the stopping of the person. It's only setting it up so a person can be required to give a breath test. Isn't that's the intent of this current version?
Representative Klayman, through the chair, that is my reading of it, correct. And I can give you more specifics as to why we chose to keep urine in but take blood out. Take urine out but keep blood in at a later point.
There's no
blood test here.
Through the chair. So what we're looking at is that when you take a breath test, it measures your blood alcohol content through the breath. It's not actually authorizing a blood test. It's just basically we're giving authorization, okay. Putting marijuana in an existing statute, even though there's not a blow test for marijuana. Is that right?
Continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representatives Klayman and Millett. To continue with the theme, sections 119 and 121, beginning on page 68, delete the words blood and urine from these sections, which these specifically relate to a minor's refusal of a chemical test. Section 130, beginning on page 73, added the word possess specifically, I believe, on page 75. Yes, so that the Commissioner of Corrections can, in fact, prohibit a prisoner from using, consuming, and possessing marijuana or marijuana products. Previously, he could just prevent them from using or consuming. Section 34 is merely a technical change. former section, section 141, I'm sorry, former section 141, deleted amendments to statute 1738-220A3, which related to crimes for which juveniles might may now be punished as adults, which now conflicts with 1738-280. That was the section I mentioned earlier that allows for the confidentiality of court records of minors convicted of marijuana crimes. Keeping section 141 in conflicted with the ability of the courts to seal the records of minors convicted of marijuana violations. So we made a choice and decided we wanted to keep them as keep the records sealed instead of having them tried as adults. And finally, section 142 on page, I believe it begins on, yes, begins on 80, but the specific, but it's on 81, section 142, page 81, added the Department of Administration to the list of departments DHSS must consult with in establishing and conducting programs designed to deal with the problems of persons operating a motor vehicle while under the influence of marijuana. That is the end of the summary of changes between versions P to G.
Fantastic. Before I go into questioning for you, we have some students in close-up who would like to testify. So I'm going to open this to public testimony right now, and we will begin with the close-up students. Please come to the podium and identify yourselves for the record.
This is going to be awesome.
Do we do one at a time, or?
My name is Haley Hoban. I go to North Pole Middle.
Could you speak up a little bit for...
My name is Haley Hoban. I go to North Pole Middle. Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak. With marijuana becoming legal, has some problems that come with it. I was told that they're treating it like alcohol. So we can't do blood tests with it. And we would take them to get blood work. The chemical THC can stay in your blood for 30 days. The problem is that we have no way of telling how impaired someone is. And marijuana might end up being a gateway drug. And there are younger children my age thinking that just because it is legal, that they can smoke it. And we do know that people smoke it, especially kids. This is going to be a bigger problem because it's legal. And I've noticed that kids have been getting caught possessing or smoking it, and they've been let off very easy with no, they're not getting necessarily in trouble. They're being let off easy, just telling them it's not a big deal. And I think we have to protect the kids for sure with the drug. Are there any questions?
Thank you. Gave a very good presentation. We appreciate your being here.
Thank you.
Before I start, I was wondering if my friend could videotape this for my mom.
Certainly.
I am Madison Stites from North Pole, Alaska. I'm very grateful for this opportunity to be able to testify on my opinion on the marijuana bill. I believe that marijuana should not be allowed to be used in front of communities or in public areas. I believe that if a man is using marijuana in a public place, a child might come by and see this happening and want to do this also. I believe that we should not be encouraging this unhealthy addiction. I would also like to point out that we should not be allowed to allow people to smoke marijuana before or during that person's driving. Marijuana will make a person dizzy and lazier, increasing the percentage of car accidents and most likely leading to more deaths of American citizens.
Thank you very much. Very good presentation.
If I may, for your information, this is not the time, but at some point with some bill, I may be offering an amendment to some bill to make a marijuana establishment illegal within 500 feet of a school or church, a place of worship, public play area, and so on. It's not ready to go into a bill yet, but I'm anticipating an amendment to some bill when the time is right. So I appreciate your support on that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, I am Caden Peterson from North Pole Middle School. I am currently in the 7th grade. I believe that marijuana should never be smoked in public, in front of children, or to be carried in pockets/bags in public. Never should a smoker be able to smoke and drive. Smoking marijuana causes you to be loopy and dizzy. So do you want your kid playing near a street with a person that just smoked a bud driving by? It is extremely dangerous and it will hurt the people of Alaska. Thank you for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Do we have any other students who would like to testify? Or do we have anybody else in the audience that would like to testify? We have actually two people online that have signed up for testimony, Don Hart and Rhonda Marcy from the Wasilla, the Matsu LIO. Are you still there, Don? Don, are you there? Rhonda? Well, I guess they must have given up on us. So we will keep public testimony open. It's about 5 minutes to three right now. Does anybody have any further questions for Mr. Brown?
Not today.
Any further discussion of the bill today?
I was wondering if Tom could bring Kayla with next time, too. Is that?
What's that?
Your wife. I was saying, I wonder if there's a way to get her back on a regular basis.
Oh, Kayla.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
All right.
We'll have her bring the dog next time. I do have a question.
For whom?
It's just for the world, for Tom, wherever he is. I'll want to go over with you, through the chair, anything dealing with what's happening with medical marijuana, whether it's in here or not. And I'm just flagging that because I have some concerns that we've never really implemented that.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I'll be happy to come over.
And anybody else you want to bring in. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Well, public testimony is not closed, but it's held until the next committee meeting, the next draft, et cetera. Representative Clayman.
Just a query in terms of, I know the initiative takes effect on Tuesday, and it sounds like we're not going to pass any bills on. I know the memo I distributed last week suggested there might be a very small thing we could try to do, and it sounds like we're not going to try to do anything before Tuesday.
It sounds like, from what I've gathered, that there's a possibility that the ABC board is going to be holding a meeting in order to determine what is a public place, which is probably the most important thing to have done before February 24th.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, I am going to reopen public testimony because Matsu just called in. They were having technical difficulties. We've had two people who've been sitting there for 2 hours, so we want to take their testimony. Don?
Hello.
You there?
Yes, ma'am, I'm here.
If you could identify yourself for the record and tell us if you're representing any organization, and then proceed.
Well, I'm not representing any organization. My name is Don Hart, H-A-R-T, and I came to Alaska in 1959, so I've been around a little while. One of the things that I came to speak about to the Judiciary Committee, because my understanding is the Judiciary Committee has an interest in the law and the fact that possibly the Judiciary Committee could be looking at the bills to determine how to avoid unnecessary waste of the court's most precious resource, which is their time. It, from the looks of the bills, not only the one that we first looked at, but the revised edition here, the 88-page revised edition, the problems with it, the unconstitutionality that it raises, is going to cause a serious problem with the court systems. But in addition to that, because of the way the law is written, based on the law enforcement officers, and the shortage of them at the present time, you're going to have to increase those probably a hundredfold in order to handle them all. One of the things you've done in these provisions is left the discretion to law enforcement officers to make a determination whether or not to require anyone they stop for any reason to submit themselves to searches without a search warrant, to submit themselves to tests for blood, urine, or whatever else, or by adding the word marijuana to these particular criminal offenses that exist today. In courts, repeatedly in courts, I've heard law enforcement officers testify that they're entitled to make, at their discretion, any call that they want, that this person is under influence of something, it must be under influence of something, and force them to go to the hospital, take them over there in handcuffs, and force them to submit to tests. Even though they're found not to be under influence of anything, there's no consequences to law enforcement officers abusing their process and violating the constitutional rights to privacy in the state of Alaska. But the unconstitutionality of the law, the part that I'm more concerned with, is the part like in the first part of it before it's revised, it referred to containing. The word containing means any amount. What you've done by using the word containing in the law are referring to leaving it open to any amount in any one of the criminal statutes. You're dumping an entire burden on the Alaska Crime Lab to test every person that comes in, everything that's submitted to them for any amount, the minutest amount, using gas chromatograph, atomic absorption effective photometers, into the billions, because a billionth of amount is still there. You don't have any definitiveness to any particular amount, so any part of it. And if anybody ever and on the Judiciary Committee happens to have a pet, you know that if you go outside every day, you kind of look for the hairs that might contain on there, but that's any amount of it would be the same as the cutoff level on your analysis is 35 grams per milliliter is equivalent to 2 BBs rolling around in a boxcar. It's a very, very minor amount. The problems of it is there's no definitive in the law that you have and the unconstitutionality of it, because it allows law enforcement officers to violate the right to privacy, and they can go into anybody's home. Like you said, in the one where you said you just added marijuana to the part about the person that's on bail, that they can search the entire house. And I know personally that listening to you express your opinion where you said, does that mean they can search the whole house? Yes, that does mean they can search the whole house. But the courts, contrary to what the interpretation, and the courts have stated repeatedly, a person on probation or parole, a person on bond, the only place a law enforcement officer is allowed to search is the part that person has access to. If he has access to only one room, he doesn't have access to the kitchen or the garage or somewhere else, they're not allowed to search it, but they do it anyway.
Mr. Hart, could you wrap up and maybe send us your comments in written form? It's slightly after 3 o'clock, and I want to get to Rhonda Marcy, who is waiting there also, and give her the opportunity to testify. So if you could send us your concerns, and we will try to get back to you and hopefully allay some of them.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Rhonda Marcy?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members, for allowing us this public testimony. My sentiments mirror Mr. Hart's quite a bit, and I will address them in writing. It was a getting a large packet of docket of material this afternoon and not having an opportunity to clearly review it all. But my questions would be, and some of the concerns about, if it's in a body massage oil, that only 1 ounce of body massage oil would be allowed to go with you. There's a lot of consideration, I believe, that the committee needs to have more information about before they fall into the rhetoric that the school children express as far as this is an evil weed and we must not let people see anybody getting medical benefits from it or truly understanding the purpose of the plant. I don't testify today with any of those misconceptions, understanding this miraculous plant and all the abilities that it gives people. I think that we need to look very carefully before we start limiting, ways of extracting things or trying to make more fear-mongering instead of teaching people proper ways to do extractions that are safe. We'll just go ahead and ban them, which, by the way, I would like to point out, it already is, and people are already doing it, young people, young men particularly. So your further banning a banned activity isn't protecting public safety any more than it stands today. And I think education concerning this whole plant particularly, but those topics, is vital in you being able to be leaders for the population of Alaska, which we send you to Juneau to do. And I'll put the rest of my comments in writing and direct it to your committee. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thanks for waiting to testify. All right. With that, we will adjourn for the day. We'll be meeting again at 1 o'clock on Friday.